2 o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Thank you, as always, for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us here on this Monday afternoon. Hope you had a terrific weekend. If you think back to when the NBA was trying to decide, and I remember it fairly well. We were sitting here in your office doing shows like we're doing now. Well, if you think back to when the NBA was trying to decide what the criteria was for letting teams into the bubble, we knew right from the start that the Phoenix Suns were on the cut line, right? That they were, either there was going to be a scenario in which they were, or there was going to be a scenario in which they were not going to be invited in. And we went back and forth all week, all these different proposals, all these different plans. Some of them had the Suns in, some of them didn't have the Suns in.
But the ones that did, there was a good reason that they had the Suns in. And that was, they went back through history and were able to show that a team in a position that the Suns were in had made the playoffs in previous years.
Correct.
Anybody past Phoenix did not.
Yes.
So the Suns were at basically the cut line of,
I think it was 6 games out with 17 to play.
Yeah.
And teams have made it in the past.
Teams had made the playoffs.
And there was a lot of debate. And there still continues to be a little bit of debate about whether the NBA should have just taken the 16 teams that would have made the playoffs anyway and invited them into the bubble and not let anybody else in, or whether it was, were they trying to get Zion in the bubble and that's why they expanded it, or was it because, as you said, they wanted to be fair and said, well, you know, a team like the Suns, it might be slim, but teams like the Suns have gotten in the past, so we have to invite them too. For whatever reason, that debate went back and forth for a whole week. Here we are, a month and a half later, 2 months later, and aren't we glad the Suns did get that invite? Because
sure,
they have made the absolute most of it.
Well, I am sure the Yotes fans are thinking the same thing. That team was sinking. They weren't going to make the playoffs. They weren't playing very good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they went from being really good to being, they weren't going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
So by adding these, getting these extra teams in, by going to 22 teams, I mean, you've given the Yotes a chance to play and the Suns a chance to play, in which in a normal season, let's be quite honest, neither one of them were going anywhere.
Right.
Neither one of them were making the playoffs.
Absolutely.
Neither one of them should be playing right now if they only took the true playoff teams. But because they decided to expand it, you get these opportunities that you wouldn't have in a normal season.
This is Monty from last night. Games like the win last night over the Mavs are exactly why he wanted to be a part of the bubble.
Like I just told them, this was what I wanted to experience in this bubble was something like this, where we just had our backs against the wall, and across the board we got efforts from everybody. Even though we didn't make the smartest plays tonight in the first half, in the second half, that third quarter, we won 36-19. And it was just will.
Here's Devin Booker on the exact same topic. Games like last night are what you need to do to earn a little bit of respect around this league.
Those are the wins that we need. The wins that we need to, you know, gain the respect in this league. You know, those grind out tough games and everything's not going your way, still finding ways to, you know, to get a win and come out with it. So, you know, there's a lot of complaining on both sides throughout the whole night, but, you know, the ability for us to lock in and, you know, be down 13.5 and come with a whole new approach the second half. But big credit to that, to the bench players, Javon coming in, campaign coming in, and, you know, changing the whole energy of the game.
The Suns don't get the invite to the bubble. They never get a chance to prove themselves in a game like last night.
No, and I do think that these games matter for the future, because these games are meaningful games. They're playing games that matter to them, and they're fighting bad. They're playing good teams. I mean, the Mavericks are a good team. They're going to the playoffs. So to come back and win that game, and, you know, listen, they don't have Kelly and they don't have Aaron Baines. And from what I've heard, it is doubtful that either of those guys are going to play this season. It is doubtful. I don't want to rule it out completely, but my belief, based on the people that I've spoken with, is it's doubtful that Baines or Kelly Oubre will play in these bubble games. So without those guys, other guys have gotten opportunities.
Yeah.
Cam Johnson has got an opportunity to start.
Yeah.
You know, Mikal Bridges has got an opportunity to be a focal point. Mikal Bridges, you know, he didn't score a point until the third quarter, but his effect on the game, two big block shots defensively. I mean, he's just so good. You know, these guys are getting those opportunities that they wouldn't if they were sitting at home. This getting into this bubble was a big, big deal for Phoenix. Yeah. It really was. But don't underestimate it. It was a big deal.
It was. But it also, as you like to say, it takes two to tango. And half of the job was the Suns getting the opportunity, and the other half was them taking advantage of the opportunity.
Monty making sure that everybody was dialed in.
Yeah, Monty making sure that everybody understood, you've been given a gift here, people. You've been given the opportunity to play more basketball and to be able to prove that you belong here. Don't squander it. Don't take advantage of it. Don't come here and half-ass it. Don't come here and go through the motions because you don't want to be here and you know that we don't have a chance of making the playoffs. You've been given a gift of 8 extra games that other teams don't get. Don't waste it. Don't squander it. And they haven't. They haven't squandered a moment of it so far.
No, but the question is, will they, if they end up being out of it, right? The first game mattered. The second game mattered. The Clippers game tomorrow will matter. But say they lose the next two games, right? The Clippers and then Indiana. Say they lose those games. They play hard, but they lose. And you're looking at it like, okay, they're out of it. You know, there's 6 games back, 6.5 back. There's 5 teams ahead of them. Okay, they're not going to make it. To those games, I do want to see. Are they going to play hard in games 6, 7, and 8 if they're out of it? I mean, I don't know. I hope they do. Because, again, I think you're trying to build something here with culture. So I hope that they play hard and take it. But right now, it's a lot easier now to play hard because you believe, you have hope.
Yeah.
You have hope. And the other teams are giving you hope, too, because the teams ahead of them are 1-7 outside of the Spurs. At 1-7.
Mm-hmm.
So, but once you lose that hope because you've lost a couple of games that other teams have won, I want to see how they respond.
I hope they do. I'm not going to sit here and say that I know for sure that they will, but I hope they continue to play hard through the end because I think that's what Monty's culture is all about. I think what that'll be is a true test of the buy-in of the guys for Monty's culture. Do they continue to play hard? Do they continue to give him everything that they've got? Do they continue to listen to him when they've reached game 6 or game 7 of the bubble and there's nothing to play for anymore? And I think, honestly, Booker was just, I played that soundbite a second ago about Booker talking about the respect around the league. They'll get respect around the league
if they play hard.
If they
games.
Play hard in game 7 and 8, even though there's nothing to play for, they'll come. They'll leave the bubble, and people around the league will go, you know what? Kudos to the Phoenix Suns. They showed here and they gave a damn. They showed here and they played like they were, hey, thanks for this gift. Thanks for this opportunity. We're going to do absolutely the most with it. And that's going to just further the culture change talk that has been going on around the Suns since Monty got here.
Listen, it is a good chance, too, that some of the teams they play in the last 4 games or so don't have anything to play for either.
Sure.
Can't move up in positioning. Maybe guys want to rest guys to get ready. If they go into the playoffs, they might want to rest guys.
The last game they play is against the Mavs. The Mavs aren't going to have jack squat to play for in that game.
Nothing.
In game 8, the Mavs will have nothing to play for then.
So now you'll have 2 teams that have nothing to play for, and that's where Monty's really got to try to get the most out of those guys.
Here's Monty today. I hope fans back there can see how badly we want this.
I hope our fans are excited about, you know, the level of intensity that we're playing with, the grit, the toughness, different guys stepping up. That third quarter last night, around the 7-minute mark, when JC and Cam and Dario and Frank and those guys off the bench just gave us life. You know, I'm hopeful that our fans can see how hard we're playing and how bad we want it.
And yet another NBA insider. I mentioned this earlier, Bobby Marks. We've had him on the show many, many times here on Burns and Gambo from ESPN. He tweeted out this morning, 3 games into the seeding games, I already feel that there is a huge player development advantage for teams like Phoenix and Washington and San Antonio versus the 8 teams that were not invited to the bubble. It's hard to replicate game action when you're in an empty gym.
Yeah.
He's absolutely right.
Yeah, those 8 teams that didn't get, and this is why we said so many times that just getting in was a win because you get to play and the others don't. And in previous years, the Suns would have never gotten in. They wouldn't have gotten in. So that's a victory in itself that they played well enough to be invited as one of the 22 teams.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch. It's been a lot of fun to watch so far. Tomorrow, 1 o'clock. Is when they play the LA Clippers. Lou Williams is questionable. for that game. Montrezl Harrell hasn't played yet for the Clippers, who, again, shot 54%, made, what, 24 three-pointers and demolishing the Pelicans over the weekend. Clippers are very, very good, and that'll be a very interesting game to keep an eye on tomorrow at 1 o'clock. When the Suns take on the Clippers. But when we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show through the first 10 games of the season, Diamondbacks find themselves with one of the worst records in the National League. They've got just 50 games left on the schedule. Are they already running out of time to turn this around? We'll talk about that coming up here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. All right, just real quick before we talk D-backs baseball after they lose 3-4 to the L.A. Dodgers. Everybody's so focused, Gambo, in Major League Baseball on COVID and the Cardinals and the Phillies and the Marlins and how they're going to complete the season and things like that. There's something else going on in Major League Baseball that's not getting nearly as much attention. Man, in this shortened season with the shortened ramp-up time, pitchers in particular going down like flies.
Soroka
the latest. Atlanta starter Mike Soroka has to be helped off the field with an apparent Achilles tendon injury in the latest MLB pitching injury. And then Sarah sent me this earlier. Just haven't gotten around to reading it yet. Shohei Ohtani has been diagnosed with a grade 1 to 2 strain of the flexor pronator mass. A general timetable for beginning a throwing progression is 4 to 6 weeks.
We talked about, you know, was it Strasburg was out, Kluber was out, Kershaw was out, he came back. There was another big, Verlander's out.
Yep.
Now Soroka, who is a great pitcher, he's out. Yeah, there's just a lot of key players are out. I mean, listen, this, you know, you try to ramp it up, yep, and then you shut it down, and you try to ramp it up in a short amount of time, and pitchers are, you know, more than any other, more than anything else, pitchers are being affected.
They're not used to doing that to their bodies.
No.
They're not used to preparing their bodies that way. And there was a lot of fear around baseball that was going to be the case when they started up the season. Hey, COVID's one thing. You're going to run into a bunch of injuries when you start this thing because the ramp-up time was so quick. And sure enough, especially when it comes to the pitchers, it is happening. You and I are both, I would say, diehard baseball fans. And I think you and I are both, as we turn our attention back to the D-backs now. They're 3-7 on the season. Normally, a 10-game sample size in which you go 3-7, generally speaking, means absolutely nothing.
No.
When it comes to a regular season. It's just
no, you ignore it.
It's just
you
a 10-game slice where you go, okay, that's a bad 10 games. You've got 152 more of them to prove to baseball who you are. I'm having a hard time, and I think you are too, trying to figure out what this start means in context to a 60-game season, because I just don't know how worried I should be about it.
I mean, obviously, there's a difference here. Listen, there's no excuses for how they've played. They've had no injuries. They have no COVID players. They got seven guys that are going wrong right now. It's very confusing, because this is a better team than what they've showed. They are. I mean, this is Mike Hazen put together a good baseball team, and they got off to a really bad start. The concern is it's, you know, 15% of your schedule's done. And there's teams that, you know, you're going to be chasing that aren't going to play 60 games, like the Phillies and the Cardinals and the Marlins. And so, you know, you may lose opportunities to make up games. Now, you know, maybe they don't play 60 games. That's a concern, too. Maybe they only play 50. I don't know. But some teams certainly aren't going to play 60 baseball games. You are wired. We're all wired to ignore a 10-game stretch, because baseball is 162 games. But this one, you know, you've got to take it more seriously because there's only 50 games left. Now, I'm not panicking yet. It's a terrible start for the Diamondbacks. Go get swept by the Astros, I might be there. Go, you know, don't play 500 ball in your next 10 games, I might be there. You know, if you go 4-6 in your next 10, and all of a sudden you go from 4 games under 500 to 6 games under 500, and now you're down to 40 games? Well, I'm worried.
Yeah.
So I think these next 10 games are very crucial to at least right the ship, play 500 baseball at the minimum, play 500 baseball, and try to get some of these bats that are ice cold going. And they will get going. They will. Peralta and Escobar will hit. They're too good a baseball player to hit under 180 on the season. It's not going to happen.
I agree. The question is, and I don't know the answer to this, at what point is it too late for them to have started hitting? Is it 20 games? Is it 25 games? Is it 30 games? You mentioned...
Depends on what their record is.
You mentioned the next 10 games.
If
Peralta and Escobar... aren't, if it takes another 10 games to get them going again, I mean,
you're going to live and die with them, Burnsy.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have to.
You're going to live and die with those guys.
Who else are you going to play?
But I'm just saying, you know, Escobar and Peralta are proven Major League Baseball players.
That's what I mean. Who else on that roster would you say, okay, take Peralta's spot. Okay, take guys. They don't have anybody.
You'll see Varsho get at bats a designated hitter. He's a lefty, left-handed hitter. He'll take at bats away from Lamb. So, you know, that Jake will probably lose time. Varsho could very well get at bats. I think they're going to face a righty now in Houston. They were supposed to face a lefty. I think the Astros changed things up. So we'll see how that goes. But I think you could see Varsho take at bats away at designated hitter. You're not going to change. You're not going to not play Calhoun. And you're not going to not play Escobar. You're not going to not play Peralta. You don't have answers. Those guys have to figure it out. They have to figure it out.
Sure.
And they will because they're good ball players.
They will, but again.
But will it be too late?
Will it be too late?
Yeah, it's a big question.
Will it be too late? And what exactly is too late?
And the next 10 games
are
crucial.
Is what I'm struggling with a little bit. I think if after 20 games, the Diamondbacks still have the second worst record in the National League, well, I think you can just about stick a fork in them. The season will be about a third of the way over. There'll be teams in front of them piled up like a traffic jam.
You have a lot of teams to pass.
That they would have to pass in order to get there. And see, you brought up this great point when you were talking a second ago, and it's a very, very good one. With teams now not playing all 60 games, we have to assume the Marlins aren't going to get there. The Phillies aren't going to get there. The Cardinals aren't going to get there.
Winning percentage.
If it becomes just down to a contest of winning percentage, the Diamondbacks having more games of those teams, it might not help the D-backs. It might not help them because
it hurts.
Because it doesn't give them those opportunities to make up those games. Or those teams that are in front of them, it doesn't give them opportunities
to lose
as many games to bring them back down to the Diamondbacks level. If you're going to play this, you know, unequal playing field season all year long, it puts the Diamondbacks at a tremendous disadvantage if they play 60, but the Phillies only play 50, or the Cardinals only play 52. Tremendous disadvantage.
Yeah. And that's the thing that you look at is, you know, they just don't have the ability to make up those games against those teams. And, you know, listen, we don't know if the Diamondbacks are going to play 60. We right now we'll assume they are. But, yeah, we are very wired to ignore 10 games in a baseball season. That's the way we're programmed. We don't think about a bad 10-game stretch and say, we don't panic and say the season's over because the team got off to a bad 10-game start.
I mean, look at some of these guys, all right? Take away their batting average, and if I just put yourself in the context of a normal baseball season. Carson Kelly is 5 for his last 24. Happens. Jake Lamb is 1 for his last 16. That happens.
He's 0 for his last 15.
Well, I know, but
yeah, 1
okay,
for
but
16.
Play along with
yep,
me.
Yep, okay.
Right? In the context of a 162-game season.
Slumps happen.
If I said to you, hey, player X is 1 for his last 16.
He's in a slump.
Happens all the time.
That's a four-game slump.
4-8, 12-16.
That's four-game. He had a bad four-game series.
Now, Escobar's, he's 5 for his last 38. Okay, that's a week-long slump. He's been slumping for about a week. Yeah, my brain's not wired to think about baseball players in a 60-game season because those numbers, those happen in 10-game sample size all the time.
What's Ahmed?
Ahmed is...
Do you have Ahmed?
I do.
I'm a fan of Nick Ahmed. I am. He's a good person. He's a great defensive player. He is striking out almost every time up.
He's 2 for 31.
How many strikeouts?
Just 6.
Was it only 6 strikeouts?
You know who's got all the strikeouts?
Who?
Eduardo Escobar. Eduardo Escobar is 5.
I saw Lamb Ahmed strike out 3 times in one game this weekend.
I'm looking at his stats right now on Baseball Reference, Arizona Diamondbacks 2020 stats. Nick Ahmed has 6 strikeouts on the season.
He's 2
for 32.
2 for 31.
2 for 31. Eduardo Escobar 5 for 38 with 13 punch outs so far this year. Yeah, in a normal season, okay, big deal. You know, he's had a bad week.
Guys have bad weeks. Happens all the time.
Yeah, it was the it was the last game that they played. The 3-0 loss to the Dodgers. He struck out three times.
Yeah.
He was 0-for-3 with three strikeouts.
He played a key role in the Suns' come-from-behind win over the Mavs last night. He might have, in fact, been the key guy in that win. What kind of improvements has Ricky Rubio seen from his teammates inside the bubble? The Suns' point guard will join us next here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Welcome back on this Monday edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. One of the things we've been talking about a lot today, the Suns' win over the Dallas Mavericks last night, 117-115. And joining us right now, somebody who had an awful lot to do with that win, Ricky Rubio, 20 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists. He joins us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Congrats on the big win, Ricky.
Thank you.
Well, first, tell me, when you guys got down 15, you never quit. You kept fighting back. You ended up taking the lead. But give me the thought process of a player when you're down 15, how you're able to fight back.
Well, I mean, you have to approach the same as when you're up 15. It's a 48-minute game, and you have to keep doing the right thing every time. And if you keep doing that, you're going to have a chance to really get in the game, especially if you do the right things in defense. And I think in the third quarter, we showed that the defense was the key, and then we could run and play basketball. We didn't do nothing special. We just play our game and the style that we want to play, and believe in the system. And I think we did, and it showed that when we do that, we have a chance to win every game.
Ricky, how difficult is it to play with so many of your teammates in foul trouble? DeAndre had 5 fouls. Book ended up fouling out of the game. Mikhail had 5 fouls. How tough is that to play when you've got guys that are in foul trouble?
It's tough, but then the bench came in and played a perfect game too, so that helped. That's the growth of this team. We've seen more depth, and that's huge for to play in NBA, to play an 82-game season. And it's something that we were looking for, and I think everybody is on the same page. And got to understand and learn from the mistakes we did. When you're in foul trouble, know how the game is called and try to fix it.
How much, if at all, Ricky, do you change what you're trying to do individually when you see Booker on the side, when you see DeAndre on the side, and you know that it's you out there trying to put your will on this game? What do you do differently when you know you don't have those guys?
Well, I got to know the weapons who I have on the court. And when those two guys are out, I know I have to be more aggressive. I have to look more for my shot, and learning who and when to pass, but learning their the skills. I know JC has been working a lot on his three-point shot. Cam is an excellent shooter, so I was trying to look for them too, but at the same time being aggressive on the pick and roll. Frank coming off a tough season when he got injured, and he's trying to get his rhythm back and get him a couple easy baskets so he can get in the game.
I know at times, Ricky Rubio, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, I know at times the bench play has been a little bit criticized for the Phoenix Suns. How gratifying do you think it was for them to basically provide the game's biggest moment in coming back from that deficit the way you guys did in the third quarter yesterday? How big was that for those guys in the second unit?
It was huge, but at the end of the day, we are a team. It's not about bench or starters. It's all of us, and we have to do our job. I know the bench sometimes come in the game, and it's hard for them to really find a rhythm if we're not sending the things out for them. So it's about us as a team doing the right thing. And last night, they step up big. When we have foul trouble, they came in the game, and they didn't quit. They elevate the level of the game and win the game for us.
Ricky, when you look at Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges and the opportunity that those guys are getting, especially with Kelly out, do you see a difference in the way that they're playing right now compared to when the season ended?
Yeah, I see a lot of improvement, and that's huge. And that's why we are a young team, and we have a lot of room to improve. And we can see only 2-3 months, but it's not usually what the offseason looks like, but we see a lot of improvement from Mikel, from Cam, from Dario, a lot of guys who have a lot of room to really get and elevate their level, and with that, elevate the level of the team and the success of the team.
What was your thought process coming into these eight games? Was it to try to develop as a team and build chemistry, or was it to try to make the playoffs?
Trying to make the playoff always been our goal, but of course that's the end. We can't forget that it's a long season. Now it's only eight games, but during the whole season, our goal was to make the playoff too. During this up and downs during the season, you have to have different goals too. And now our goal is play game by game. I know our chances are low or super low, but we are not going to quit. We're going to meet the opportunity with the right preparation, and that means play every game like it's the final game and grow with the team. Of course, you can do both at the same time, have a goal making the playoff, but at the same time grow with the team, and games like yesterday, it really helps when you're down 15 and then come up with all the pressure that it's been, that if we lose a game, we probably out of playoffs, so the pressure is extra over there, and we just play the game to really build that chemistry too.
Ricky Rubio joining us live from the bubble in Orlando. Suns beat the Mavs last night. Next up, they'll play the Clippers. You talked about exactly what I wanted to ask you about, and that's what a win like last night does for the overall energy level and confidence of your squad right now, because you're absolutely right. You guys are a long shot still to make the playoffs. How far does a win like last night go in bolstering the confidence that you might have in the internal belief that you guys can actually do it?
I mean, it's a huge win, but we have to use it the right way. Usually in a young team, a success early, it's using it in the wrong way, where we relax and we think we did what we had to do, and it's not enough. It's playing game by game, and the same thing if that shot from Hardaway would have gone in. We would have lost the game, and we just have to play our best every game and grow from there. We can't relax from having success, and we want more. It doesn't stop here.
I speak for myself on this one. I've spent a lot of time looking at what the other teams in a similar situation to you have done so far in the bubble. How much time have you spent looking at the Kings and the Pelicans and the Grizzlies and the Blazers, et cetera, to see what they've done so far since you guys have been there?
We do. We watch their games, and it's fun to see them lose. But at the end of the day, if we don't do our job, nobody's going to do it for us. So we have to win every single game and one game at a time. We started with Washington. We didn't play our best, but we still got the win. And last night, we did a poor job in the first half, but I think we came up big in the second. But we haven't done anything. There are six more games, and we go step by step. With all the teams losing, give us a little chance to really make the playoff, and even if we lose one or two games, but all we have to do is here is right now thinking about the Clippers. We know it's tough, but it's another game, and we have to approach it. We beat them in regular season already, and we know how to do it. We just have to execute.
Ricky, as one of the leaders and experienced players on the team, you could see Cameron Payne has played very well, and him and Javon Carter play very well together, their ability to press full court. I'm curious as to what do you say to a young player like Ty Jerome who's not getting the opportunity to play? What do you, as a leader, what do you say to him to keep him motivated?
Stay ready. Like I said, opportunity meet preparation, so we have to, everybody have to be ready when their name is called up to really help the team and be ready. This is a league where you're always going to have your opportunity. There's a lot of games, there is a lot of situations that happening and going on, games that you're not supposed to go in, then you go in because an injury or because foul trouble, whatever it is. And if you perform and you do good, you're gonna have another opportunity. So just be ready for that.
Ricky, last one for me. At the end of the game, they went with 2 3-pointers. They didn't try to play for overtime. They went for the win. Porzingis took a three with 3.2 seconds left. They got the ball back. Hardaway Jr. missed a three. Were you surprised that they were taking a three-pointer, or did you think that they would go with Luka having so much success getting to the basket to tie the score and go to overtime? What was your thought process on that?
Well, actually, Luka tried to go to the basket, but then Mikal really played good defense, and he kicked out to Porzingis, and DA closed out really well. And then, he had the chance to really get a pull-up or two, but I think they played overtime the other night, and they were trying to win. Based on being the 7th seed, they can go, actually, on the 8th seed, and for them it's hard because they lost against Houston the other night to go 6th seed, so... They're just trying to win the game, and it's fair.
Ricky, congrats on the good game. We appreciate it. I look forward to talking to you in the future. Good luck the rest of the time there in the bubble.
All right. Thank you.
It's Ricky Rubio joining us from Orlando Suns Clippers tomorrow at 1 o'clock. But when we come back here on the Burns and Gambo Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, the Arizona Cardinals getting ready for their restart, and the Arizona Cardinals receiver, DeAndre Hopkins, trying to figure out his new relationship with Kyler Murray. They're making steps, and we'll tell you about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. By the way, as we welcome you back into this Monday edition of the Burns and Gambo Show, we're going to play some DeAndre Hopkins sounds today. The Cardinals receiver met with the media as training camp is kind of slowly gearing up for the Cardinals. I do want to pass this along because this was the last major Power 5 domino to fall. According to reports, the Big 12 presidents have voted for their league to play 9 conference games plus one non-conference game.
Okay.
It was first reported by The Athletic, but that is the plan. So as it stands right now, the number of proposed games to be played by each league, the ACC will play 11, 10 conference. The Big 12 will play 10, yeah. 9 conference. Big 10, 10 conference only. SEC, 10 conference only. Pac-12, 10 conference only.
So I'm reading from Chip Brown. The non-conference game for Texas is going to be the UTEP game on September 19th in Austin. So they'll have the UTEP game as their one, you know, non-conference game. So 9 plus 1 gets them to 10. You take a couple games off the schedule. You have hopefully some flexibility in that schedule. The Pac-12's got a couple of weeks of flexibility. We'll see how that works. You were mentioning it earlier, Northwestern football shut down.
Yep.
COVID-19 shuts down Northwestern football through Wednesday at the earliest.
Yep.
So that's something to keep your eye on, too, in the Big Ten.
All right. DeAndre Hopkins today held a Zoom teleconference with local reporters. There was a little bit of a stir created over the weekend. He passed all the requisite tests for the Cardinals and the NFL, and he showed up this weekend at Cardinals headquarters to take part in what is basically their media day. And what I mean by that is he needs to show up, put the uniform on, and take pictures so that when the Cardinals are playing a game on TV, they can show DeAndre Hopkins in his jersey, right? DeAndre Hopkins, number 10, or whatever the case may be. So he put on the uniform, and the Cardinals tweeted out a picture of him in the uniform, and everybody went crazy over it. Hey, look, for the first time, there's DeAndre Hopkins in a Cardinals uniform, and all the Cardinal fans got excited about it again. It's a different kind of training camp, and Hopkins today spoke about whether he's got enough time to develop the requisite chemistry that he needs with Kyler Murray.
I think I will have time to develop chemistry with Kyler. Kyler going to his second year, obviously, is advanced in his offense. Other guys also. Last year was the first year of a lot of people being in his offense. And you can tell just from the first day that, I wasn't here, but just from hearing guys, we're far advanced than where we were this point last year. So I think, obviously, he's matured in his offense and I'm new to it, but he's doing a good job of keeping me up to par with things and also the other guys around me. But I think we will have time to develop chemistry.
I do think, and I agree with what you said earlier, if you think that in game one of the game of the seasons that count, the games that count, that the relationship between Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins is
going
to be where it needs to be, there's no way it's going to be ready or where it needs to be for game one.
You know, the good news is that it's not like Kyler's got to worry about, 7 new players that he's got to get used to. All of these guys he's played with outside of Hopkins, right? The offensive line is the same. Drake was here last year. Fitz was here last year. Kirk was here last year. The 3 rookies from last, like he's familiar with everybody
on this offense except for DeAndre Hopkins. So that's the one guy he's just got to get into a rhythm with. Now, DeAndre did go to Dallas and worked out with Kyler in the group, so they got a little chemistry going there. But if it was like, you know, if you've got a bunch of new players and you're trying to figure them all out, that might be a little bit different. But they'll develop chemistry as time
Hopkins
goes on.
Talked about those Texas workouts, and he thought they were beneficial.
It was very valuable. It was, you know, something that I think obviously we're going to continue to do once we get free time, a little off time, build chemistry like that. But Kyler getting us together in Dallas was something that I expected of him, something I knew he was going to do. And him being the guy he is, he wants to win. So, you know, that was very expected of him to do that. And we really don't have a lot of time together, obviously, but, you know, we're making the best of it right now. And I really, you know, I haven't had a season where I've, you know, really had a lot of off seasons with a quarterback. So, you know, that's really hasn't been a thing, you know, a problem of the past, and I don't see it, you know, being a problem now.
That's interesting to me. I would think Hopkins would have been a guy, for whatever reason, who would have spent a lot of his off-season time, you know, with Deshaun Watson in Houston the last couple of years, right, to kind of establish, and here he is basically saying, I've never really done that during an offseason, so it's probably not going to be that big of a deal that I didn't do that with Kyler, because that's just not something that I typically do a lot during the offseason, hang with my quarterback, get to know my quarterback, things like that. So I would have thought a guy like Hopkins would have done a lot of that.
You know, when you've got a player that talented as a quarterback, especially on third down, you could put the ball up and he's going to go get it, right? I mean, you don't have to be perfect with the route running because he's just so talented. And if he's got single coverage, I mean, like, even if you're not spot on, he's just that good that he can go up and get anything. Same thing with Fitz. I mean, with Fitz, a lot of times you just put the ball up and he'll go get it because he's got great hands and could sky. So, I think DeAndre, I don't know, if, you know, how many yards and receptions he's going to get. I mean, it's probably very much what his average will be. It's a matter of how quick this offense is going to play. They'll run more plays than most teams, because they'll be on the field more. So they will run more plays. So I do think there's plenty of balls to go around for him and Fitz and Kirk and even Kenyon Drake and a couple of the tight ends.
He's learning the playbook. He says it's going well. He even made a funny reference when talking about learning the playbook.
I think so far, you know, this offense has it's came along well for me. I'm picking it up. I'm in my playbook every day, twice a day on my phone. It's my screensaver on the plays. So, you know, I'm doing my best to catch up. And obviously, these guys are doing a good job of the way they teach. Cliff is he's a great coach. He's doing a good job of having everybody prepared, you know, for whatever happens.
It's the screensaver.
Yeah.
So you could steal his phone and get the plays?
Well, I mean, I suppose you'd have to know his password, right? But, I mean, like, my screensaver is a picture of me and my wife at that event that you and I emceed.
Okay.
Is
that the screensaver? Is that what the screensaver?
Yeah, right there. So it's you mushing dogs
in Finland.
Finland. Okay. I didn't know if that was Finland or Alaska.
That one's Finland.
That's mine. Oh. That's from when, remember when you and I had to wear the tuxedos for the Boys and Girls Club? Yeah, that's
mine. Mine is dog mushing in Finland.
Mine's not a playbook.
And then when you open it up, then when you open it up, there's another one. What's that called?
That's your lock screen, I think.
Lock screen?
I don't know the difference of them. I have no idea. But he's got the plays, so he's way ahead of us.
Says he's been in a playbook twice, two times every day just studying the playbook. He'll be fine. Look, DeAndre Hopkins is a great player, and there's only one, like I said, there's only one guy. The defense, you're going to have 6-7 new guys on that defense. So that's going to be a lot more adjustments than trying to fit in one guy on your offense.
It's time for the Coors Light What's On Tonight, the games that we're going to watch this evening, brought to you by Coors Light, Mountain Cold Refreshment Made to Chill. None of the local teams in action this evening. Everybody's in action tomorrow, but I can tell you, in the NBA tonight, if you're scoreboard watching for the Suns, right now there's 5.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. The Pelicans are beating Memphis 95-90. Right now in the second quarter, the Sixers are beating the Spurs 43-42. Those are two very scored board watching games to watch.
Man, Spurs are off to a good start.
They are, but they're losing by a point. Now that's going to do it for us. We're out of here. Tour Lavelle tomorrow at 2:30. We will see you tomorrow at 2 here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a good night, everyone.